Welcome to Entanglement Radio, transcendent talk for the conscious mind. Join us for inspiring conversations with visionaries in spiritual science, new thought, and conscious healing. Explore the potential and infinite possibilities of what it means to be human with some of the best guests in radio. At Entanglement Radio, it is all connected. Now, here is your host, Angela Levesque, on the OM Times Radio Network.
For you today, we have the skeptical psychic Nancy Dutetre on, and we are talking about the subject of her book, How to Talk to an Alien. And yes, I'm excited. We're going to see how they communicate with us, maybe find out if we've tried to communicate with them, and who should our ambassadors be? I think that's a really interesting question. Next week, we have a reoccurring co-host, Suzanne Michelle, and we are talking about the outer edges of inner knowing. So all about going as deep as possible with our intuitive senses. And but before we get to our awesome guest today, I just remind my listeners, if you need to get a hold of me at any time during the week, you can email me at angela@hestiahealth.com. You can find me on Facebook and on Twitter at Hestia Health and Entanglement Radio. So I am, we haven't had too many alien conversations on this program, and I think it's about time. So I'm excited to do that. So let me introduce my guest, Nancy Dutetre, known as the Skeptical Psychic, is a securities litigation attorney who became a trained psychic detective and a remote viewer trained in military CRV methods. A graduate of Princeton University, she is a frequent media guest on shows such as Coast to Coast AM, one of my faves, and also hosted her own weekly CBS radio show. She is certified in intuitive gestalt psychotherapy and the author of several books, including Psychic Intuition, Everything You Wanted to Ask But Were Afraid to Know. So with that, I feel very honored and blessed to welcome Nancy to the program. Hi, Nancy. How you doing?
Good, Angela. Actually, I think you're the only radio show host who has ever not asked me how to pronounce my name before we got on the show. And I can see that that's because your last name is actually the old French word for bishop.
Yes, yes, very good. You know, I was going to ask you, and then we got talking, and I forgot, but I felt pretty confident that I knew how to say it because I actually grew up in Canada, so I have a lot of French training. So
yeah, interesting.
I was wondering, though, I was thinking all week how people would kind of bastardized your name because I, you know, with Levesque, they put the S in there. So I get Levesque or Levesque. But what is the worst pronunciation you've heard of your last name?
Oh, that's really hard to say. They come all shapes and sizes, let me tell you. When I tell people, they say, well, how do you pronounce it? So you pronounce it right. I say, you're never going to get it. It's Dutetre. So nobody gets that. And they say, what? You know, Dutetre. Okay, forget it. How about Dutertre, Dutertre, Dutert? And I tell them if all else fails, just think of two turtles.
Well, I like it. So I'm going to preface this conversation for my listeners that we're going to talk about alien communication, but we're coming from the place that we're not here to try and convince people that aliens exist. Or, you know, it's funny, growing up, I always thought, why are we even debating this? Of course they exist. And of course they've tried to contact us. Did you have to be convinced of it? Or is it something you were kind of like, duh, of course?
No. I have this really probably unpleasant personality where I have to sort of be convinced of everything. And starting point, I grew up in a very academic family. They thought that psychiatrists were way out of, you know, on the fringe. So forget about. So anyway, I trained 100% trained into my psychic ability. I was apprenticed to a psychic detective for about close to 10 years. And I trained into becoming a spiritual medium, doing mediumship. I trained into remote viewing, which is a trainable, you know, skill anyway. All of this is sort of trainable. And from that, I slowly wandered into the paranormal field and became a paranormal investigator. didn't really believe in ghosts until over the years now. You know, I know that spirits, ghosts, you know, and by the way, I use all the politically incorrect words for everything. So don't mind me on that. I'm going to say psychic, not intuitive or sensitive. I'm going to say, you know, ghosts instead of spirits or, you know, same thing. Well, anyway. So I was actually kind of, and by the way, I was never interested in ufology or the study of UFOs, did not believe in alien entities. And in fact, I was kind of surprised to discover I was about a week or so ago, I was flipping through my previous book, which you mentioned, Psychic Intuition. And I noticed on a particular page I had written, you know, I'm fine with believing in ghosts and spirits now because I've experienced them with all of my five senses. So I have no personal doubt. But someone, you know, I'd probably have to come face to face with a space alien for somebody to convince me that they're aliens. So just be careful what you ask for in life. Since that time, well, I've had major UFO sightings. I have had various forms of contact with what I can only assume are alien entities through a variety of different methods, kind of unorthodox. So I now am fully convinced, and plus now I've done a ton of research and I sort of understand what's out there in terms of really solid documentation. And you sift through all the disinfo and all that kind of stuff too. But you use, if you are psychically minded, you use a certain sense of discernment in kind of sifting through this, you know, all the material that's out there.
Yes, that's where you get the name the skeptical psychic. I kind of went on the other end of the spectrum where I just believe everything. you know, I've had enough encounters in the angelic realm, I just think, you know, and I grew up listening to Coast to Coast, and I just thought, you know, I just believe there, you really can't get too weird for me. So we'll just leave it at that.
I mean, that's, I think you, that helps, you know, to kind of catapult you into a lot of these, you know, more exotic issues. It helps. They've done, you know, there was, I don't know if you ever heard of she was a parapsychologist and I believe a psychiatrist her name was Gertrude Schmeidler. And she did a very famous study. It was called the goat sheep effect. And basically what she did is she had two groups of people that she tested with ESP using, I mean, very simple, just using, you know, guessing what card was going to be flipped over next. And her results were really fascinating. She found that the believers actually scored much higher in their ESP than did the skeptics. So belief actually changes your reality. It literally changes your reality out there. So we all think that we're all living the same reality, but we're really not. It's some people will literally perceive more than other people.
I think that's fascinating. And, you know, that's kind of part of the reason why my show Entanglement Radio, kind of borrowing from quantum physics, as well as just this idea that we are very intertwined and connected, is that there is a lot of possibilities that we're starting to realize and to tap into. And that one of those things is just really understanding that perception is, like you said, very different for each person. And we kind of have this world out there that says no objective reality, and we're going to test and we're going to create these experiments to make sure that we can replicate it so that we know this is truth. And what we're realizing is that it's like you said, there's a lot of different ways to see the world, and our worldview and our beliefs and values and all of that interacts with our what we believe is possible.
Right. And I'm actually saying something I'm pushing that envelope a little bit further, not just that we all live in this consensus reality, which we do. I mean, what we all consider to be real is what, you know, most of us, a majority of us would say Yeah, I see the color blue out there. Do you see blue? Yeah, I see blue. Do you see blue? Yeah. Do we all know that we see the same shade of blue? It's been actually proven that we don't, but we can all generally agree that that's our reality. So that's sort of a, it's for the lowest common denominator of sensory experience. But what I'm suggesting is that what we choose to intellectually believe will literally change what our senses will experience.
Yes, that is another layer to the conversation. We are going to be on a break here in a little bit, but let's start. I want to talk about your book, but first I want to ask, your book is How They Communicate With Us. Have we ever tried to communicate with aliens?
Yeah, we have. I mean, our government has in some ways that I find, I mean, maybe they seemed like a good idea at the time, but you know, so we had the gold plates that got sent up, I think, by Drake and Sagan, who I think were working with NASA at the time. They sent golden plates up on the Voyager that went, you know, barreling out into outer space. And on these plates, it contained, you had to play them on a phonograph. And apparently there are instructions on how to use a phonograph. You know, and they're different languages from Earth, different photographs of our cities, our plants, our wildlife, things like that, different races of people, just so that they can get a general gist on, you know, who we are here. But the fact that you have to play it on a phonograph when already here we are, you know, 30, 40 years later, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about that before we jump into our conversation about our beliefs and our ideas that they would communicate with us how we would communicate with them, which I think we make that mistake in a lot of different realms in our life. So we'll continue this conversation here with Nancy Dutetre when we return. We'll be right back.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hi, this is Angela Levesque, host of Entanglement Radio. Join me Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern for inspiring conversations with visionaries in spiritual science and conscious healing. Entanglement Radio, Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern. Transcendent talk for the conscious mind.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgemeer, host of the Inspired Parenting Radio Show, where every week we bring you empowering information from the diverse fields of conscious parenting, education, neuroscience, consciousness, health, and metaphysics to support you in nurturing the best in your children. So if you're interested in understanding what shapes your children's minds, spirits, and hearts, join me every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and prepare to be inspired.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle. Free your mind with OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
For the break, you were talking about us sending up these gold plates, and we had this conversation about beliefs and how that shapes our perception. And I think that our idea that they would communicate with us in the same way that we would communicate to them is just like I said, we make that mistake in a lot of different avenues in our life, but it just seems so silly. Like, we still blow things up to send rockets into space. It's like, clearly we are not, that seems very primitive to me. We are not the pinnacle of technology and intelligence. And so do you think that that belief in itself inhibits our ability to really have this two-way communication?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. If you start to, well, and by the way, we didn't get to the other methods that are being used, but I mean, you have the SETI array of telescopes, which have sent off these basically radio waves targeted towards, I think it's the Andromeda galaxy, which they figure take 25,000 years to reach them, and then another 25,000 for us to get an answer, if they choose to send an answer. By which time it all seems kind of ridiculous to me. Meanwhile,
me too.
If you look at some of the faster answers or communications that have apparently been given to us, they're highly unconventional. I mean, clearly scientists are not going to be very happy about them because they don't fall into our neat little categories. The same way that language, alien languages don't necessarily fall into nice, neat, vocalized categories like our human languages for a number of different reasons. They have, and I'll just give you some real quick examples. I know we don't have a whole lot of time to talk about the history behind this, but I have researched many, many case histories of alien contact, alien abductions. And for example, and aliens, apparently, they not only some of them, and there are many, many different races and species. Some of them speak literally hundreds of human languages through their innate intelligence. Some of them speak none at all. And some of them require different types of very unique technologies, such as, sometimes they hold these things that look like wands or remotes, spheres, boxes. Some of them have knobs on their headsets. Some of them are communicating with language motherships outside the Earth's atmosphere. There are a whole range of things that different types of aliens use to communicate with us. The one thing that you hear most commonly is that they communicate telepathically. And there may be many different reasons for this. It may be a higher, more evolved form of communication. It may be because they don't have the physical anatomy that we have as humans to create vocalized speech. It may be that it's simply just more efficient, particularly with what I would call the one mind species, where they act collectively as a group and less as individuals. So, you know, they're communicating a number of different ways, and they're not really conventional. Some of them, for example, even if they can create audible sounds, they've been described as sounding like bees buzzing or dogs barking or birds, specifically meadowlarks, chirping. So they're creating communications, but it's our job, I think, to be able to be interested enough to try and figure out what it is that they are communicating.
And do you feel that from the case histories and accounts that you've read that people have had a grasp of what they were trying to communicate to them? Or was it just like they were clicking and hissing and creating staccato sounds and I have no idea what they were trying to tell me?
I think that in situations where you don't have that telepathic element to it, that people pretty much don't have a clue. And excuse me. I think that's also because it's sort of shocking, I think, you know, if you're being communicated with by an alien, which you had doubts whether they even existed anyway. So you don't really have time to think about it. Plus, you're not standing there with a recorder and you're not, treating it like anything academic. You're just sort of saying, wow. Or you're trying to get the gist of something. And I'll give you an example with different types of alien writing. And what I've explained in my book, How to Talk to an Alien, is that alien writing comes to us basically in three different ways. It comes through actual artifacts, such as the Roswell I-beam. I give an example of a couple of actual alien artifacts in my book, which you could take a look at, you know, when or you've looked at it, I guess. But they're very difficult to come by. Second way would be through recollection. Usually that's somebody who's been abducted or has had contact, and maybe they saw an inscription of alien writing on the spacecraft, on the inside or the outside, and they remember it and they write it down. The last way is through channeled alien writing. And most scientists or academics dismiss that out of hand because they say, oh, you know, it's nonsense. It's doodling. It's subjective. And so they don't include that. But that can come, you can get that from dreams, automatic writing, psychic channeling, any number of different ways. What I've proposed is that we cross compare all of these different elements. And once you start to make cross comparisons, you start to see that there are similarities in many cases right across the board. And so what you do is you begin to put together sort of a Rosetta Stone. That's how we figured out what Egyptian hieroglyphics meant. It was only because we could compare the exact same government edict that was also written in Greek and it was written in Egyptian Demotic script. And that's, you know, you cross compare. And people haven't done that. So I think it's very confusing when they're suddenly confronted with something that sounds like nonsense, you know? And there are some contactees, or channelers, I should say, who are excellent at being able to understand this language that's coming through them or that they're hearing. And some of them, very few, excuse me, can translate it word for word. Some of them, and I would say this is more the majority of contactees or channelers, can get like a general gist, the feeling of what's being communicated. And then a lot of them have absolutely no clue what any of this means. They just write it. They don't know why they're writing it. They feel compelled. They do feel that it comes from an alien source, but they don't know what it is. So you've got, you know, everybody sort of in different places on this. And I think the only way to figure out what the alien languages truly mean in a way to translate them is to cross compare them. You know, if you're lucky enough to get a telepathic communication, that can be, and by the way, I've explained, I don't think it's in my book, but I have explained this in my MUFON symposium presentation, that most people don't think about how you receive telepathic communication, but it comes in several different ways. You can get it as an absolute sort of holistic brain-on-brain impression, like you just knew it. You can get it as imagery. You can get it in audibly as human language, or you can get it audibly as alien language. And I have read all kinds of very interesting cases that demonstrate all of that. But the telepathic piece of it very often is a major clue as to the meaning of what you're receiving.
To me, that would just seem like such a more direct communication. Would you say that telepathy is a more advanced method of communication, or is it just like this group of aliens would use this and this would use that, and it's not necessarily a matter of being more primitive or more advanced?
Well, it's sort of what I was saying before. I mean, it could be that they don't have the physical equipment to do audible speech, in which case that's where evolution or whatever would take them, which would be towards telepathy, you know? Do I personally think it's more advanced? I mean, I can tell, I've written about that kind of thing in my book, Psychic Intuition. I think that what it does is it puts you, well, let me put it this way. For me to finish this sentence right now, it just took me 3 seconds. because it's linguistic, it's audible, it's sound waves, and I have to go, it's rational and logical. I have to go from point A all the way to the end of my sentence. And that takes time. Time is an element of speech. When you're communicating telepathically, time is much less an element of speech, and so you can communicate holistically entire concepts. You can communicate things much larger than concepts within a very, very fast, you know, period of time. So you're being put on what I call the superhighway of information. Hmm. So is that more evolved? Yeah, I suppose that's more evolved. Yeah.
Well, you know, and maybe this this might be a confusing question, but I was kind of thinking as I'm reading your book about, you know, they're making noises, but maybe those noises aren't words. Maybe they're just supposed to be sound frequencies and they're supposed to be felt rather than intellectually interpreted. Does that sort of make sense?
I think that's a great possibility. Sure, absolutely. When you're feeling things,
that was, but you're feeling something. I talk with my hands a lot, and sometimes they get away from me.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, there was retired Sergeant Clifford Stone, who was claimed to have been an interfacer. Job classification on behalf of the military, highly classified, where they would show up at crashed UFO sites and communicate with any of the live entities. And apparently there have been quite a few. And what he talks about more than anything else, he says the communication was all done telepathically, and it was done, he was the recipient. He wasn't initiating communication, and I'm not so sure that he was participating that much.
Well, let's bring that up when we get back on the break, as well as I want to talk about, do they speak with accents, which I thought was interesting because I'd never even thought of that before, and what exactly does that mean? So we'll talk about that more when we return here with Nancy Dutetre on Entanglement Radio. We'll be right back.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Hailing Light, on Om Times Radio every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Hailing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is. Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. OM Times.
About the subject of her book, How to Talk to an Alien. So before the break, I had asked the question about maybe they're not communicating in words, but more in sound waves that should be felt. And you were sharing a story about this man who was not an initiator, but a receiver. So I'd like you to continue that.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was trying to get that in before the break. But the idea, basically, he's a former sergeant in the military. And his job was to go to crash sites and communicate with the live alien beings. And so he claims to have done that a fair amount. But he, interestingly, has almost always said that the communications that were done telepathically were highly, highly emotional. And he's clearly an empath. So he was able to pick up the emotion that was being communicated that way. In terms of emotions being communicated through vibrations. I mean, I think we do that every day of the week when we listen to music. I think that's definitely a possibility. That is, you know, and that requires you to look a little bit further into the mind of the alien, which may be very, very different from us, you know, and it may be that they have organized their experiences of the world in a way that is literally very alien to our perceptions of reality, so that audible sounds may be, you know, strictly emotional vibrations, or as I also suggest in my book, it may be they may be interdimensional. A lot of times contactees have described alien voices, audible voices, as sounding like recordings that are being played at high speed, either backwards or forwards. So it could be that they're creating different sounds that if you had the capability with your ears or with your brain to hear them at different speeds, you would hear a whole layering of information.
Hmm. One of the things in your book, you talk about, do aliens have accents? And at first I was like, what does that have to do with anything? Why does that matter? But it's actually quite significant. So tell us a little bit about your research and some, maybe share with us an account of an alien actually speaking with an accent and what that really means.
Yeah, I mean, I was just listening to, on the breaks, I've been listening to all the different radio show host talking about their shows, and you know, you have one who's got a rather British accent, and you know, and you have another one. I feel that she's probably somewhere from perhaps Texas. I'm not really sure, and you know, you got maybe somebody from New York who's talking a little bit like that. Anyway, but the point is, every time you hear a different accent, without realizing it, it has painted a huge landscape in your brain. It's given you a ton of information. It's told you something about where they're from, what their likely life activities are like, what they may do for a living, where they may have learned that language. It tells you tons of things. So what I discovered in the course of researching different case studies on alien contact and alien abductions is that a lot of these aliens do speak with accents. And it's kind of interesting because, for example, you had one contactee, I think it was Cardenas out of Florida, who went up a couple of times on a craft, and he spoke Spanish very little. His English apparently was not so hot, but Spanish was good. And he said that these aliens were speaking Spanish with South American accents, Portuguese accents, and I believe Italian accents. Now, why would that be? That makes you stop and think, what's an alien doing speaking with an accent? Well, that's an indicator as to who they have been learning from, or maybe where they're living. Even more interesting are the aliens that have, you know, and there are lots of cases on these from all over the world. They speak with no accent. And what does that tell you? Well, that and if they can understand all the nuances of a language, which apparently many of them can, there's really only one conclusion, I think, that you can probably draw from that, which is that they weren't sitting in a spacecraft someplace listening to, you know, language tapes. You know, I remember that from being 8 years old, you know, Ue la bibliothèque, la blah, you know, stuff like that. No. And by the way, when I first, and I majored in Romance languages, I've studied it since I was a kid. I'm now fluent in it. But when I first showed up in Paris, after reading books, you know, I would read 300-400 pages of classic French and even old French. I showed up there. I couldn't speak anything. I couldn't order a cup of coffee. At any rate, these aliens who are speaking with no accent, the biggest clue that we have from that is that they are walking among us. And so rather than going around looking for all kinds of hard evidence, like I think a lot of ufologists tend to do, you know, they're looking for photographic evidence or, you know, signs of radiation in the earth where there have been space landings or bits of rocks or whatever it is they're doing. But if you start looking at clues like this, you start to understand what's really happening. You had, for example, and a lot of people have discredited him, but he's quite an interesting former, I mean, he was an author. His name was George Adamski, and he talked about meeting aliens in Southern California who spoke with a perfect Southern California accent. You have others who speak, you know, perfect English. Strangely, some of them speak perfect Finnish. There's some military apparently reports, as explained by former, he's a, I'm going to get his title wrong, Commander Sergeant Major, I think, Bob Dean, who talked about seeing a very classified NATO document about aliens among us, basically. And apparently, in some of those cases, they were speaking perfect Danish, perfect German, or perfect Italian. You had in the W-56 Friendship case, which was a case in Italy starting in the 1950s. It went on for about 30 or 40 years. There was an entire Italian village that was communicating on a regular basis with a collective of different species of aliens who were allegedly living in a 200-mile-long base beneath the Adriatic Sea along the eastern seaboard of Italy. And eventually these aliens were apparently communicating with very, very high-level government people, industrialists, scientists all over Europe. They were speaking French, German, Italian, English, you name it. But one of my favorite stories out of that is that one of them apparently spoke with this very strange accent, and they learned, this guy learned how to speak Italian by listening to old radio recordings of Mussolini. So I imagine, and you know, maybe I'm wrong here, but I imagine that, you know, it's sort of like the old recordings that we hear of like the 1930s and 40s movie stars, you know, where they're talking a little bit like this and they've got strange intonations in their voices, you know, and what does that tell you? That puts you in a time frame. It puts you in a location. It gives you tons of knowledge about them.
Yes, that makes sense. There was a few instances in the book where you're talking where they had kind of like old-timey language that isn't part of our vocabulary now. And that does, that gives you clues as to, you know, if they were mimicking or, you know, what was the source material that they were using in order to still be using those kinds of words that we are no longer part of our common language now, today. So I think this, you know, there was a whole bunch of things in the book, like I said, similar to the accents, that I was like, why would that matter? One of the things I want to say, though, is and that's something I really want to talk about after the break, is, you know, kind of bring it on home. Why does this matter and what are they trying to say? But I when you hear all of these different accounts, how do you sift through them and be able to discern that, yes, this one's legitimate or this one, you know, can be tossed away?
That's like the million-dollar question. You just have to feel your way through it. I'll give you, I don't know if I have enough time to explain this.
We got a couple minutes.
All right. Nonsense languages, okay? I have studied those. You have four different basic types, all right? And they range from the insane category, like crazy land, to paranormal, to religious. You have what's called glossomania, which is known as clanging. It's something that schizophrenics often do, and it's an alliterative repetition. So, you know, and it doesn't really mean anything to them, doesn't mean anything to the speaker. You have glossolalia, which is interesting. It's also a type of nonsense language, and it may mean something to you, the speaker, but it doesn't mean anything to the listener. You have xenoglossy. Now, that was something that was studied by Dr. Ian Stevenson, who is a psychiatrist with the UVA Medical School. He studied about 2,000 different cases of this all over the world, mostly in children, of xenoglossy, where the person would begin to speak in a language which was 100% unknown to them. So you have housewives who suddenly are starting to speak Bengali or Swedish, or, you know, kids in India are speaking some strange language. So it doesn't mean anything to them, but it does mean something to the speaker. To the listener who may understand that language. So, you know, if I didn't know French, si je commençais à parler comme ça et à dire des choses, so, you know, whatever, that would mean nothing to me, but it might mean something to you. Understanding French, that's xenoglossy. So that's a strange situation. Then you have the last category, which would be speaking in tongues. And that's clearly religious. And that means something different to both the speaker and the listener.
Well, when we get back, like I said, I want to bring it on home and say, okay, so if they're speaking to us, what are they saying and what does it all mean? So we'll return when we get back with Nancy Dutetre here on Entanglement Radio. We'll be right back.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at OM Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. OM Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business. Your conscious connection to a more mindful world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Open hearts, inspired lives. Visit HestiaHealth.com to find out more. So, Nancy, ultimately, first, before we kind of get to the big kind of global, what does this all mean? As I'm reading a lot of the accounts and examples that you had of you know, personal stories of conduct or mashing together two words of abductees and contactees. I feel like many of them come from like the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Are they still, maybe that's my perception, are we still being contacted on a regular basis?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I think more and more and more. I think that's sort of, you know, if you look at the different experiencer groups that have popped up, you know, very recently, we're being contacted on a much more grassroots level, I would say. So it's kind of interesting.
So do you feel, because a lot of the stories are, you know, the farmer or the housewife or whatever, do you feel that people in high levels, like in high government, are also being contacted?
I think that's a really interesting question, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about that. And I don't know 100% the answer to that, but my guess is that, you know, people, for example, the interfacer I mentioned to you before, who was speaking with aliens on behalf of the military, he was apparently contacted by aliens from a very, very young age, I think around 5 years old. So basically they picked him. So a lot of these people are pre-selected. I do think that there seems to me to be sort of, you know, if I could try and figure out a trend in all of this, which is a little dangerous, but to me it seems as though what they do is they select very kind, gentle, not necessarily very well-educated, more simple people, not sophisticated, complex, go-getters, not people like that. So, you know, the farmers are kind of typical. And, you know, I know plenty of contactees who they're really not interested in money and all the stuff that money can bring. And they're not interested in acquiring power, influence, anything like that. They just are just all around good human beings. Hmm. I think that's who they're contacting.
Yeah, that was going to actually be my next question, is are there any commonalities that you can see? But like you said, sometimes that's a dangerous thing to do. But so ultimately, what do you think that they're trying to tell us? Are they trying to help us? Are they trying to hurt us? What are your thoughts?
And that's why I say understanding what their language is really paramount to figuring out, are they benevolent or not, you know, good or evil? What are their intentions? You really have to know how to communicate in order to figure that stuff out. And you got to know who's who and what's what. And what I list in the book, How to Talk to an Alien, is different, primarily military sources, talking about how, you know, the number of species who are here and which ones are good and which ones are bad. And it's all over the board. I mean, truly all over the board. So you've got apparently some who they absolutely are dead set intent on wiping us out. You've got others who were equally dead set on helping us through a spiritual evolution, which involves becoming better stewards of planet Earth, taking care of ourselves, making sure we're not blowing ourselves up with nuclear weapons, and making sure we're keeping the Earth as a sustainable kind of a place. You have others who are here by accident, get lost. You have others who are here who simply want to engage in trade. And that would appear to be a lot of, you know, mining minerals, metals, that kind of thing. So it's truly all over the board. And people need to be aware of that. You know, it's not, I sort of get very unnerved, let me put it that way, when I see people who, you know, and they're well-intentioned, all of them, who are either hyper paranoid, saying, you know, they're all evil, they're here to, you know, eat human beings and destroy the human race, as well as those who are 100% in love. They're all good, they're all loving, and they just want to help us no matter how they hurt us.
Do you think that on some level that they're not telling us publicly, that they have people in higher levels of a government who are studying these such things? And even though they haven't disclosed it to us, that they're like, yes, we know they're here. And yes, we have secret departments that are looking into deciphering their language and their communication.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you begin to, and I didn't know any of this until I started really researching and historically researching. You can find some of the earlier books. I think Major Kehoe was one of them, who was quite open about what the program was and the Air Force relationship with UFOs. It got kind of clammed up with the CIA around 1950 or so. And then it went into a very severe disinfo and ridicule program that lasted extensively despite ongoing contacts by the government, relationships, knowledge of UFO activity and all kinds of things. So I think we're slowly getting ourselves out of the disinfo ridicule phase to prepare for some level of kind of slow trickle down disclosure. But yeah, I mean, I have plenty of contacts who have met met entities. And, you know, in higher places and in lower places. So, yeah, of course it's been going on.
And then I've recently heard that some people are saying that the government might actually put out fake UFOs to sort of dupe us into, oh, look, we have this enemy and we want to take away your your rights because we need to fight this. I don't know if you've heard about that, but it would seem to me that understanding language and communication might help us in that not being duped.
Absolutely. That's called Project Bluebeam. That's quite a well-known conspiracy theory that what they'll do is create a giant hologram in the sky that will show an attack by alleged evil alien forces, and that we need to suddenly go into a form of worldwide martial law so that, you know, New World Order or Illuminati can consolidate their power over the globe. I don't know that they even need to do that. I think that with all the, you know, when you start reading that, you know, the top 62 wealthiest people in the world have as much money as the lower half of the entire population on the globe. I mean, really, do they really need to consolidate? I mean, they got the consolidation, so I'm not sure. I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe finally somebody could get a very clear picture then if they, you know, it's a hologram and everyone's like, oh, look at that. That's what I always, like I said, I've thought that aliens have existed and contacted us basically since I was a kid. And it always seems strange that we never can have a really solid photographic evidence of it.
Oh, well, you know, if you look at my book, I give you solid photographic evidence of several different types of aliens.
Yeah, I think that, you know, but when you see the YouTube videos of the craft in the sky, and it's always kind of fuzzy and shaky. And anyway, that's just an aside.
No, I'm going to disagree with you on that one. There are, yes, you have to sift through a ton of garbage. Absolutely. But there are gems to be found in there, which will take your breath away.
Oh, cool. Maybe I need to do a little bit more looking into it. Well, we are almost at the end of the show here, and I want to give you plenty of opportunity to share where people can find your book, websites, all of that information, and anything you'd like to leave my listener with today.
Well, okay. So the name of this book is How to Talk to an Alien. Can they speak our languages? Can they read our minds? What are they trying to tell us? And that is, it's recently launched. It is available at Amazon. It's in Kindle format also. Or you can get Barnes & Noble, MUFON, the National Group has it, or the International, and smaller bookstores. Let's see, what else? My other books, in case people might be interested, because I do find now that with the release of this book, people seem to be also gravitating to my previous book, which is called Psychic Intuition, Everything You Ever Want to Ask But We're Afraid to Know. And in that book, I explain psychic ability in terms of neuroscience, linguistics, and psychology. And I sort of explain many of my personal experiences training into becoming a psychic medium. And the idea is anybody can do it. If I can do it, anybody can do it. And I've, you know, I've written also co-wrote the memoirs of a retired or now retired New York City homicide detective and an art history book about porcelain. My websites are, the primary one is theskepticalpsychic.com. You can contact me there. Or talkalien.com. That's a little bit newer. You can contact me there as well. And I am, since I'm putting together a database worldwide of different recorded speech of aliens as well as writings, I am very, very interested in any samples anybody would be willing to share with me, so that I can do a comparative analysis, which is really the goal here. And they can contact me at either of the websites.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. I really enjoyed our conversation. And yes, I hope people do. I hope you can put together this comparative analysis, because it seems like this is a very relevant conversation for this time in our evolution. So thank you again.
Thank you, Angela. Appreciate it.
All right. So coming up next week, we have co-host, guest, Suzanne Michelle. She's going to be on the program here and there throughout the year. And we're going to be talking about the outer edges of inner wisdom. So I'm really excited about that. If you tuned in a couple weeks ago and you wanted to hear Don Miguel Ruiz, he will actually be on the program February 24th. So don't worry about that. And if you need to get a hold of me at any time during the week, you can email me at angela@hestiahealth.com. You can find me on Facebook and on Twitter at Hestia Health and Entanglement Radio. And I'm here live every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Eastern right here on the Om Times Radio Network. Well, this is Angela Levesque wishing you love and light. I'll see you next week.